This is the world of Salesforce and Dropbox, HubSpot and Evernote, a world unthinkable without cloud software services. Most businesses and consumers use SaaS every day to get work done. Driven by the internet and ever-expanding availability of bandwidth, SaaS has come to dominate our lives in a very short span of time. But developing a defining service, often ahead of its time, getting users to engage, secure funding, protect IP, and building a truly remarkable and successful SaaS is not an easy task. SaaS Stories brings conversations with the dreamers and visionaries who dared to think ahead. How they built their SaaS, genesis, struggles, trials, tribulations, and eventually success. Welcome to SaaS Stories. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give you a shout out to each of you in our following episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Welcome to this episode of SaaS Stories. Continuing our series of special episodes, today we have with us Andrew Goldner, founding partner of GrowthX, and we will talk about their growth program that underlines their investing philosophy at GrowthX MXP Online.
Well, that's a great question, and I appreciate it because I can tell you it literally was a thought that I had when traveling from Palo Alto to San Francisco on the Caltrain one day to go visit a company I was advising, and the thought that occurred to me, which really rolled into and became GrowthX, was that in Silicon Valley, if you know how to build products and you start a company, they call you a founder. But if you know how to market and sell products and you start a company, they call you a non-technical founder. And of course, that's not just true in Silicon Valley. That's true in every ecosystem around the world. This idea of this second-class status of citizen, for those of us who understand how to put the innovation into the hands of customers profitably and scalably, relative to the people who build and create that technology. And here we are living in the age of what I call applied technology, very different than the age of developed technology. Technology is so much cheaper than it has been, so much less complex than it has been, so much more easy to deploy than it has been, with so many more people with the talent and the experience to build and deploy it than ever before. Why is there still an over-rotation towards product and product builders at the expense of those who, again, get that technology into the hands of customers? And even though in San Francisco and probably most of our towns in the world, you can hardly walk 10 blocks without bumping into a coding boot camp, but have you ever found a market development boot camp?
Andrew is a founding partner of GrowthX. He has been in the technology sector since 1998, based in New York City, Hong Kong, Singapore, and Palo Alto. Andrew began his career in technology as a lawyer for the early internet pioneers in search, AltaVista and Yahoo, AdTech, DoubleClick, SaaS, Salesforce, and others while practicing law. He left private practice at Skadden Arps to join DoubleClick leading up to the Google acquisition and then co-founded a financial news business at Thomson Financial leading to Reuters acquisition. He then served as a publisher of Reuters News and then co-founder and managing director of the company's legal media business in Asia Pacific and Middle East. In Silicon Valley, Andrew was early at GuideSpark, an employee communication SaaS startup, and BrightTalk, a content marketing SaaS startup. He then co-founded Good Money to democratize high-performance value-based investing. During that wonderful learning opportunity, Andrew met his current partners and co-founded GrowthX. Andrew is a Kauffman Fellow, Regional Board Member of Venture for America, and a mentor at Endeavor, Alchemist Accelerator, and Galvanize. Andrew teaches venture capital at Vanderbilt's Owens Graduate School of Management. Andrew received his undergraduate degree from the University of Cincinnati and his law degree from Georgetown University. Now, on to this special episode of SaaS Stories with Andrew Goldner. Andrew, I'm delighted to have you in SaaS Stories. I remember meeting you nearly 2 years back in Oshawa, and I was very inspired by a statement you had made that day when we were having the show there. And you said, I ask my invested companies How many calls did you make for customers since you woke up?
That's true.
Right?
That's definitely a question that almost every founder who pitches me is going to hear at some point. The full question is, based on when you got up this morning to when we're sitting here today, after you brushed your teeth, because I'm going to presume you brushed your teeth, tell me an account for every 6 minutes of each hour. So every 10th of an hour, account for the actual and specific activities that you were doing to get money from your customer's bank account into your bank account.
This is awesome. And I love it. I love it because really when you talk to founders, and I talk to a lot of them, and I'm sure you do too, getting revenue is so far down in the priority. The first thing is I'll make this product. And the second thing is, will you invest in my company?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
So anyway, Andrew, welcome to SaaS Stories. And before we move forward, tell us about you and your work and GrowthX VC.
Well, you know, very briefly, you know, folks can find me on the web. I've been involved in technology for over 20 years. I started out my career as a corporate lawyer in the tech space, you know, when the internet was first commercializing. And so I just frankly was lucky because of the timing to be involved very early in a lot of the global notables across a lot of the sectors that have since developed, you know, extraordinarily from when I was involved. And, you know, that took me on a journey that also included living for many, many years over in Asia and doing an extensive amount of travel and work across Asia Pacific and the Middle East. Returned to the U.S., settled in Palo Alto in California, and was, you know, lucky enough to meet the folks who I ended up starting GrowthX with, which is, you know, a VC fund that very much leads with our expertise in go-to-market and only then follows with a venture capital relationship. And we've, you know, developed a comprehensive program to be able to do that. And importantly, not just for people in Silicon Valley. In fact, about 5 years ago, I moved my family from Palo Alto to Nashville, Tennessee, where I live now. And it's why the two of us met in Oshawa. Not many Silicon Valley funds spending time in Oshawa, you know, with all due respect to that incredible community. There's just a lot of communities around the world.
Right.
Very few VCs are choosing that one. And we're looking to be present everywhere. You know, and we're trying to do that in a way that doesn't necessarily require, you know, creating the next global consulting firm. You know, we are looking to do something as scalable as the founders who we also support.
Fantastic. What made you flip the model that lead with growth consulting and then bring in the fund? So what actually went on before? We'll get to your program, but before that, I would like to know what was going through your mind and your partners. What were you thinking?
Well, that's a great question, and I appreciate it because I can tell you it literally was a thought that I had when traveling from Palo Alto to San Francisco on the Caltrain one day to go visit a company I was advising. And the thought that occurred to me, which really rolled into and became GrowthX, was that in Silicon Valley, if you know how to build products and you start a company, they call you a founder. But if you know how to market and sell products and you start a company, they call you a non-technical founder. And of course, that's not just true in Silicon Valley. That's true in every ecosystem around the world. This idea of this second-class status of citizen, for those of us who understand how to put the innovation into the hands of customers profitably and scalably relative to the people who build and create that technology. And that was a startling thought that really led me to be more aware of some things that I think I had noticed before, but had never really sunk in, right? And when that thought occurred to me, what I started to do is to look around and kind of say, is this actually true? Because it feels true. And here we are living in the age of what I call applied technology, very different than the age of developed technology. Technology is so much cheaper than it has been, so much less complex than it has been, so much more easy to deploy than it has been, with so many more people with the talent and the experience to build and deploy it than ever before. why is there still an over-rotation towards product and product builders at the expense of those who, again, get that technology into the hands of customers? I couldn't find, no matter how hard I looked, the Heroku of biz dev. I couldn't find the GitHub of sales. I couldn't find the Ruby on Rails of market development. And even though in San Francisco, and probably most of our towns in the world, you can hardly walk 10 blocks without bumping into a coding bootcamp. But have you ever found a market development bootcamp? And at the colleges and universities that populate our towns around the world, they are overpopulated with computer science degrees, but very few, if any of them, have a single sales degree. In fact, most of them don't even have a single course on sales. And so it was really that sum total of awareness and thought analysis that led us to create GrowthX, that puts help as due diligence with a first foot forward with our expertise, and only then checks. And again, you know, we were able to partner up with our limited partners that believed in that worldview and knew that help is a powerful form of due diligence. Not only does it create a much more sustainable and healthy and long-term relationship with other people, but it also creates a much more reliable source of investment signal than pitch decks and demo days. I mean, you tell me, right? Maybe you can help me understand this. I've been trying to figure this out. You know, marching founders across the stage 2 minutes at a time with rock and roll music playing and strobe lights with an audience of people in a theater, what does that have to do with helping people solve their problems, sell them products or services, and do so scalably at a way that creates economic prosperity for the founding teams and their families and creates economic prosperity and jobs in their communities? I don't see the connection. And so that's really the breadth of the premise of GrowthX, is to do it and to do it around the world so that we also lower the barrier to entry and more founders that don't look like me, that don't come from where I come from, can also benefit from the massive opportunity that entrepreneurism presents.
I must mention that pretty much like how politics is a feed for media, funding is a feed for media because media likes funded startups because funded startups spend money in media. So it's a sort of a, I don't want to call it a vicious cycle, but it is some kind of a cycle. Okay.
It's a smart observation. I mean, listen, I think it gets back to something that I've always believed that I was taught at a very young business age, which is that what gets measured gets done.
Absolutely.
You know, and so I think you follow that trail as you have. And I think, listen, you know, as you and I were chatting before the camera started rolling, you made a very smart observation about the relative sexiness of venture capital, you know, versus earned revenue. You know, we like to say the best people to raise money from are your customers. You know, they don't take board seats or equity and they just want you to help them. But I do think there is the romance meter on venture capital, and for that matter, the romance meter on entrepreneurism is at an all-time high right now. Yeah. Entrepreneurs who are in the grind know that there's very little romantic about entrepreneurism. And I would have to tell you, for those that are practicing venture capitalists, even those that are at the storied firms on Sand Hill Road, it's not a romantic exercise. It's an extraordinary amount of hard work with a high amount of competition and an enormous amount of risk. And even though we see in the media the winners, we all also know that for every winner we read about, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds of others that aren't winners. You know, and the reality is, back to your question, when I look at the proverbial graveyard of failed startups, all I see are headstones that read the same thing. Herein lies your product. Cause of death, no market need.
This is interesting because I think Steve Blank wrote his book more than 20 years back, The 4 Steps to Epiphany. And he sort of spoke about going out and talking to your customer. So this is the rocket science, right?
That's right. I mean, listen, I mean, how many founders around the world honestly know why it's called the lean startup movement? I mean, how many folks know that that goes back to World War II and W. Edward Deming and Six Sigma and the manufacturing process? And even with the lean startup movement, and I obviously remain a big fan of Eric Ries. You know, what he did has been an amazing accelerant to what you're seeing happen around the world. But even there, the MVP is still an over rotation to product. And even with the canvas, the lean startup canvas, and even with those really wonderful tools that came out, founders are still only skimming the surface of, quote, customer discovery, or taking that four steps to the epiphany and getting outside of the building, but still only doing so in a check the box way and not really going as deep as they need. And again, right back to the observation about the Heroku of biz dev or the GitHub of sales, because there is no framework as there are in product development, because there is no common language as there are in product development, because there is no, set of tools, there is no repository. There isn't a strong way for founders to be shown the path. I mean, think about it. If I come to your country, if I come to your city and I have not been there before, and you tell me, go to this place, but you don't describe it, and you don't show me how to get there, and you don't give me a map, I'm going to waste my time and my money, all of my resources getting there, and I probably will never make it. That is the experience today when a VC or someone else says to a founder, go to market or find product market fit. They waste all their time when the reality is that path to product market fit is well-shorn, well-known, well-tread, right? It is a methodical set of steps that every founder will take regardless of their industry, sector, product, or service. But if they're not being taught it, if they're not being shown it, and maybe the best they have inside of an accelerator is access to what we call mentor chat roulette that ends in that, you know, 2-minute demo day, you know, they're going to end up where we think they end up, which is what we call the trough of disillusionment.
I think this is a great point to actually shift to your program and start talking about it in terms of how you actually put it together. So no Heroku, no GitHub. How did you actually go about developing the content, developing the process, developing how it is going to be delivered and so on to what it actually has today for the founder?
I mean, the reality is we just did the needful. I mean, we have the founders of GrowthX collectively, you know, have over 100 years of experience bringing innovative products to market, because it's all about the stage of the product and not the company, and doing something that's nonlinear, disruptive innovation. And so really we just did the needful. We obviously did not invent the path to product market fit. We are not the first ones to talk about go to market. What we did is the needful. We put the time and the resources behind creating a methodical, highly detailed, step-by-step framework that founders anywhere in the world, no matter their background or acumen, can follow in the same way they do so when they're building product, whether it's a low-code, no-code movement for the non-technical founder, or other types of tools and frameworks and repositories that product builders have. We've tried to replicate that by simply starting out by doing the needful. When we founded GrowthX back in 2015 and created our market acceleration program, which is just an internal team of go-to-market experts who are available to our portfolio founders to give them an unfair advantage and to secure for us and our co-investors, you know, what we joke as is the only form of legal insider trading available. Because that's really what it is. And it's an extraordinarily reliable source of signal, again, compared to pitch decks and demo days. And so the first step was really an enormous amount of time and resources to simply organize and create a framework and a structure and a program that a founder could methodically follow to take each step and to build up their founder judgment and their confidence as they were doing it, to understand how best to listen to and interpret and react to the signals that the market is sending, if you're willing to listen and you understand how to do that. And so it's about going to market efficiently. And so that was our first step. And we've been running the Market Acceleration Program, or MXP, since 2015. Over 80% of our companies go on to raise the Series A at a higher valuation. It was in 2019, after we had 4 years of doing this as a team and found that we had it in our own right, found product market fit with our MXP, that we then went after our big, hairy, audacious goal. I mean, we are entrepreneurs like those that we serve as VCs. We have these big, hairy, audacious goals. We're proud of the portfolio of 45 companies, but we all know that in the scheme of things, 45 is a relatively meaningless number, especially in the context of the amount of founders around the world that we want to help, especially those that have previously been excluded from the opportunity. And so we had the same challenge that we ask our founders to face, which is, how do you do something at scale? The MXP, as it was created, is carbon-based, and carbon-based life forms are non-scalable. And so how do we create a layer of silica and a layer of on-demand content to complement the real-time, live, in-person, and virtual experience? And that's where MXP Online came from. We just went right back to it and did the needful again, poured all the time and money into it, and of course, carrying on all of the learnings that we had built up over the years of doing it. That became MXP Online, which is now available to any founder in the world. It's a virtual go-to-market accelerator with on-demand content, live coaching, and interactive playbooks that literally take you to market in real time. And as VCs, again, we're now getting inside information at scale. And so founders find product market fit. We find truly qualified investment opportunities for ourselves and our investment partners. And we've been now doing that. And so, yes, to your point earlier about COVID, it was a bit of an accelerant for us as the world shut down and went virtual. We had already emerged with a virtual go-to-market accelerator. And so 2019, end of 2019 and all of 2020, this was extremely busy for us, because a force multiplier happened. In addition to making it available to founders directly, the real force multipliers for us is, we now have countries in the form of chambers of commerce and economic development bodies and private and public accelerators and universities that are licensing our go-to-market accelerator and using it to operate their own version of it. We train their staff, we train their mentors, we train their EIRs so they can become self-sufficient. And now you have a significant amount of founders around the world that are going to market with intent. They're doing it in a capitally efficient way. As we like to say, they're getting to the truth in a capitally efficient way. And yes, as venture capitalists, our ulterior motive is, we're looking for qualified deal flow. And we don't think that that qualified deal flow necessarily has to be a Delaware C Corp run by white men.
Exciting. It's time for a short break. I was discussing with Andrew how the MXP program was shaping up in terms of reaching markets other than North America. And Andrew elaborated on the partnership programs they're rolling out as a force multiplier. I asked Andrew to share some numbers, like how many countries and how many startups were in the program and what type of results were they witnessing. Stay with us.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for SaaS Stories and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Right before the break, I asked Andrew to share some numbers, like how many countries, how many startups were in the program, and what type of results were they witnessing. Listen in. Tell me a bit of numbers. How many countries, how many startups are part of this right now? What kind of results are you seeing?
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty extraordinary so far. You know, we are very active in Canada, in many of the provinces in Canada. We just launched with our first partner in Malaysia. We actually launched with a private fund in the government, a venture capital fund that is using our go-to-market accelerator to find and qualify and earn deal flow, just like Growth Hacks has since 2015. That's called Emissary Capital, and that's in Kuala Lumpur. We've been working with the Korean government for many years, but now for the first time in about 3 weeks, they will be using MXP Online and deploying that to their founders, in addition to working with us and coaches on each continent who are trained up to deploy our program. We launched about a month ago in Los Angeles, and that's already something that's going to continue for the rest of the year. We're very active and have launched in Asheville, North Carolina. We are on the cusp of launching in Arkansas. You know, we have, you know, we're on the cusp of a soft landing program from Latin America into North America. You know, the US and Canada, you know, we have a couple of other conversations around Asia. We've been working with a partner and are about to launch in Jordan and in Egypt. And we've probably have, you know, three or four dozen other active conversations with public or private accelerators or government agencies around the world to launch, you know, I would say within the next 6 months. You know, at this point, you know, there's, you know, certainly hundreds and hundreds of founders around the world that are using it. We may even be approaching 1,000 founders. You know, we launched in earnest about 6 months ago. You know, a really exciting example, and it's just the most recent top of the mind, is a program that we just finished in Western Canada, working with the FedDev out of Western Canada, who funded through Alberta Innovates Platform Calgary and Tech Edmonton, a four-month intense go-to-market accelerator run entirely on our platform. And it was exciting for many reasons. The first phase, a month long, we enabled 100 companies in Western Canada to have access to our platform that founders used entirely on their own to help themselves go to market. So immediately the Canadian government was able to harness and help 100 founders without increasing any of their expensive headcount at the accelerators to do so because they had our platform. We then consumed the output of that program after a month to select who would be in the four-month accelerator. So instead of simply an application process and an interview, we also had the output of how seriously did the founders take the program and how did the market react in that first month to help us decide who were the 25 founders that should go through that four-month intense program. And I can tell you, you know, what really is, you know, frankly, the most important thing of all are the results. And that's where we're so excited, is now that we've had enough time to run enough of these founders through the program, we're starting to see extraordinarily results. You know, some of the quotes that I love, you know, not only has GrowthX and MXP Online helped us increase our sales, but we've hit our highest sales per month. We increased 192% month over month because of GrowthX. Another one, we achieved 250% growth in MRR due to the GrowthX MXP. Another one, we've achieved three consecutive months of record revenue because of MXP. Another one, we've sent out 30 proposals in 3 months and increased our win rate percentage because of MXP Online. And to a point that we were talking about earlier with regard to funding, one of my favorite testimonials from one of our founders is that, quote, not only have we had a distinct and visible impact on sales, but also investor conversations. She said, now we can showcase our focus, our market understanding, and sales plans to address our target market in a way that resonates with investors, which is very different, right, than that 2-minute demo day pitch. We've had founders in the Canadian program tell us that they actually were a part of a program where they were required to move to San Francisco and be a part of that, what they called token experience. Whereas working with us, they stayed in district, in Canada, with their families, in their communities, and focused. They're now drawing on talent and customers in their own communities. You know, again, you know, unlike most accelerators that are teaching founders to finish product and raise money, we're teaching them how to market product and raise and make money.
At what stage should founders, or according to you, what stage should the company be to benefit the most from MXP?
Between product and product market fit.
Okay.
Right. So colloquially, generally speaking, in the world right now, we are pre-Series A. One of our strong hypotheses that we think we now have the data to prove is that revenue is the leading false positive of product market fit. That looking at or focusing too much and too early simply on revenue as an indicator of the ability to scale and the readiness to scale is a major problem for founders and their investors. Because revenue does not mean product market fit. And in our view, product market fit, something that most people don't even define, is when you have a fairly standard and repeatable set of activities that result in a fairly standard and repeatable set of market results, right? And so Series A is synonymous with scale. It's synonymous with product market fit. It's synonymous with needing to bring in your first VP of sales. And so finding product market fit requires you to have some unit of value, that MVP we'll call it, all the way to where you have that true product market fit. It may not be a recurring, you know, SaaS-based revenue, but it is predictable, repeatable, with an eye towards, you know, profitability, right? Unprofitable revenue is acceptable at the earliest stages so long as you are using the unprofitability to invest in learning towards a path to profitability, right?
Fair enough.
Learning precedes revenue. And so the founders that get the most benefit of the program are post-product, pre-product market fit. They can be pre-revenue, they can be post-revenue. They will accelerate their journey initially with some revenue, because within that revenue, there's a lot of learnings that we could put to work right away and accelerate the first stage of product market fit, but it's not required.
So how long does it take? How long is this program?
Well, you know, our program is not academic. You're not racing towards a certificate of completion. You know, you know you've graduated when you have customers and revenue, and you can predictably repeat them towards profitability. And so it's an impossible question to answer. I can tell you that getting any real benefit out of the program in under 3 months is going to be a tough thing. We have over 85 different videos on the platform that make up the primary part of the on-demand content. It's over 13 hours of practical, tactical go-to-market tips and best practices and case studies. But, you know, we don't encourage you to binge watch it like Netflix. That will do you no good. And so, you know, we typically won't work with a company or a partner for putting together a program that's under 3 months. When founders join our virtual accelerator directly, it's a year long. They get access to a year of group coaching with founders around the world and individual coaching with us, the team, and our growing number of MXP certified coaches around the world. But accelerators, it's typically 3 to 6 months to actually see the real results. Again, using the most recent example in Canada, that was 4 months and you saw real results. Pre-revenue companies hitting revenue, revenue companies tripling, quadrupling revenue, et cetera.
Fantastic. So can you give an outline of how is it structured? How is the course structured today?
Well, we've broken down the path to product market fit into six, you know, core, you know, parts, if you will, right? And everything that we do in MXP Online is intended to be highly structured and highly organized and methodical. Because again, founders build up their judgment, their business acumen, and their confidence by taking it one step at a time. The other point I'll say before I get into the detail is the path to product market fit is nonlinear, right? Yeah. You don't move forward because you've completed certain steps, watched certain videos, talked to a certain amount of customers. No, you move forward when the market signals that you are ready to move forward. And founders need to be prepared that many times along that journey to product market fit, the signal they're going to receive from the market is that they need to stop and go back and revisit an early hypothesis and revise it based on what they're hearing and learning so that they can then proceed forward with, again, intent and capital efficiency. And so you don't just, you know, it's not just start to finish in one fell swoop. You will go backwards to move forward more effectively. The six parts of product market fit: market foundation, market discovery, market messaging, marketing and sales instrumentation, market outreach, and market scale. And so everything that we do in MXP Online is organized into those six core parts. And within each of those parts, there's a significant number of steps to take. But again, we of course start with market foundation, right? A step that is so often skipped, helping founders understand how to build what we refer to as your market development budget, which is the sum total of your human capital, your collateral capital, your process capital, and your technology capital that's dedicated and oriented to market and not product. Because unless and until we know how much resource we have to use for market as opposed to product, we don't know how to then begin setting you up for success, right? How to begin orienting what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. From a variety of ways. And that means avoiding frustration among your team, your advisors, your mentors, your board members, your investors, but also your customers. I can't tell you how many times we've found founders where they've created a significant amount of churn, which means creating those referential promoters among the early adopters and crossing that proverbial Geoffrey Moore chasm is going to be impossible, because they failed to realize the post-sale burden on their team. And they went out and just got customers without really calculating the resources necessary to create a wonderful, fluid customer journey that doesn't stop with signing a contract.
Yeah.
And so, you know, customer journey mapping is a really important part. We draw it from UX and UI experience, and it doesn't just stop at sale. In any case, those are the steps. And it's, again, highly organized, highly methodical. Every step of the way is live coaching and the on-demand content that also has these interactive playbooks, which include exercises and templates for founders to be applying in real time what they're learning so that they're going to market as they're going through the program with us or with their sponsor. Again, it's not an academic.
Sure.
You are going to market seeing results in real time. And the idea is to just give you everything you need to do it. And by the way, to also work more effectively with your teammates, your mentors, and your advisors. That's part of what's missing. Without a common framework and a language and a structure, getting go-to-market help from a mentor is typically not very effective. So this enables you to do this much more effectively.
You mentioned that the first thing they want to do is to allocate resources for marketing in the various forms that you mentioned, right? Human capital and so on.
It's not so much about allocating. It's about creating an inventory of what's available, right? So a good example, if you were a founder, okay, so tell me how you're spending your day. There's two buckets. There's product and market. If you're doing anything that's not product or market, stop doing it. Okay, product or market. Let's talk about how you spend your day, what you're doing. Let's figure out how much of your time, your literal time, is used for product. How much time do you have available for market? Let's do that across the team and figure out how many FTEs are, you know, that we have to be dedicated to market. And let's do that same exercise with your processes, your collateral, and your tech stack. And now we know the foundation upon which we can go to market with success in mind and not failure.
So it is not really about available resources as in terms of money, because I'll presume that most of these companies are not funded companies. There's like friends and family kind of money. And
some are funded, some are not. I mean, listen, capital at the stage of, with respect to go to market at the stage that we get involved, there's little to any capital requirements required other than the needs of the people doing it.
Okay.
Right. And that obviously depends on the people who are involved. What are their needs at the time so that they can be focused, comfortable, and well and healthy and be able to do that market job? But other than that, again, we're doing entirely non-scalable things on purpose because we have nothing scalable. We are on a path to learning, which will lead us to not just revenue, but the best kind of revenue, the most profitable, scalable, and predictable revenue, what I refer to as the three dimensions of revenue. And we help our founders become intimate with their revenue because revenue is not fungible. Your currency may all look the same, but when it sits in your bank account as a customer dollar, it's not fungible. You need to understand the characteristics of every dollar in your bank. Otherwise, you're going to raise capital. And what are you going to do with it? Are you going to use it to go get more unprofitable revenue? Right? That doesn't make sense.
True. So you have gone public for the last 6 months, you mentioned, with the program.
Yeah, roughly.
So are you seeing some investable companies already?
Oh, yeah. We've made one. It's called House Keys. It's based in Oakland, California. It's an extraordinary founder named Julius Nayanda. Mm-hmm. It's the only and first SaaS market network for the program administration of affordable housing. And affordable housing is this massive, overlooked opportunity. It is a massively complex problem to be solved by municipalities, by the home builders who are involved, and the applicants who need access to the home to either buy or to rent. And this guy is a nationally recognized expert in affordable housing. The team has over 100 collective years of extraordinarily well-placed expertise, and he built it first as a services business after leaving the inside of the municipalities running affordable housing programs, created a service business and then a SaaS business on top of it. And he came to us through the program. We invested in him. And now he's a part of the market acceleration program that is inside of our fund. And I can tell you, we've had extraordinary results from the time he started to now. And we're now in active conversations with some top venture funds with really great general partners who are well aligned from a behavior and an expertise perspective to hopefully come on board, be a part of the next round, and help take this thing forward. So it's a great success story. And by the way, we're also seeing enormous amount of opportunities that we can't invest in because they don't align with our thesis around capital efficient. We tend to invest in B2B SaaS because what we invest in is capitally efficient, highly scalable. That tends to be B2B SaaS. And so we've also had an incredible opportunity through the program to bring qualified opportunities to our investment partners around the world. Other funds, corporate venture capital units, you know, one of the companies that we've been working with intently for 4 months, we just can't invest because of what they're doing. Otherwise, we definitely would invest. That's going to be one that I'm going to regret not being on the cap table of. I know it. We introduced them to a corporate venture capital unit of a major player in the space in which they're operating. They're now having active conversations, not only about a major investment, but the biz dev arm is also already in conversation about an acquisition. And it all stems from the fact that we're not delivering up marketing language about this great founder and take a look at this pitch deck and they graduated from Y Combinator. Now, no disrespect intended for Y Combinator, but I think there's a bigger opportunity and a longer tail around the world where we can package up methodical, bottom-up, go-to-market strategy, execution, data to give the early stage investor a lot more comfort about where that money is going to be invested outside of just product development to create the large, fast scale that venture requires.
What kind of, I mean, you did mention it earlier that typically people are finding investment at a higher valuation than the typical route, the demo day kind of route. And
well, I wouldn't say higher valuation. I just say that it's more qualified deal flow. I think, you know, the valuation is reasonable in the context, but it's the import is that it's an asymmetric and reliable source of investment signal. It's that, you know, colloquially, you know, tongue in cheek, that only form of legal insider trading. And when investors see it, they jump all over it, right? Seeing is believing. These founders behave differently. One of the things that we're doing to kind of flip the demo day on its head in Atlantic Canada with one of our top partners, Propel, which is an extraordinary real results driven accelerator in Atlantic Canada that's driving extraordinary amount of opportunity results in that region, is instead of at the demo day having the founders, you know, again, wander across the stage 2 minutes at a time without any real ability to even answer any questions about their customers in front of venture capitalists, we're setting them up to stand in front of venture capitalists who watch them pitch their customers. The entire conversation is a detail-oriented, specific Q&A and experience highlighted around who is the customer type you're going for and why, and what is the market messaging, and what is the customer acquisition strategy, and what is the pricing strategy, and what is the business model, and what is the data acquisition, and what is the conversational framework, the attraction framework, the opportunity framework, what's your next milestone, what is the funnel look like, and how are you executing, and why do you think that these are the activities you should be doing with our money versus something else? And it's just night and day.
Right. So my final question is that typically we know that one out of 10 investments actually make it and 9 are gone. So maybe not exactly, maybe 7 are gone, 2 will make back the money invested in, and 2 will be home runs, and they'll make up for the rest of the ones which die. What kind of equation do you see in this process? Do you see 80% success rate, irrespective of whether they are funded or not?
We personally experience 80% success rate based on what we've been operating inside of our fund. And as we begin to work longer with the accelerators to see what their graduation rate and their success rate is on the funding, as well as the other funds, especially the micro VC funds that we're working with around the world, like Emissary Capital, by the way, we're going to have more data. And to be sure, we're absolutely tracking it.
Great. Andrew, thank you so much for making time. I think it's a good start to the discussion. I can go on this for another 45 minutes. I'm sure you can do for the next few hours. I think we need to talk again sometime soon where you have a little more stories to share in terms of specific companies, what they're doing and the experience, and possibly have some of them join as well in terms of...
We'd love to. You know, we have a bunch of those already. And so next time, let's invite some of them. By the way, have to have a conversation where we bring in one of our partner accelerators, where we bring in some of the founders. You know, we always believe that our partner and founder words, you know, speak much more loudly and more credibly than we can, which is why we really try to highlight those real results on our website, because ultimately partners and founders, you know, want to see that. It's a results-oriented approach. If we're not driving those results, then what's the point?
Absolutely. I'm totally with you on that one.
SaaS Stories is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink enables high-quality interactions between buyers and sellers through presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create personalized sales presentations and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversation. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 990-216-3132. That is 990-216-3132.
Thank you very much for making time right in the morning.
Thank you. I'm grateful for the opportunity to be here. And, you know, I encourage, you know, all your listeners to go to growthx.com and please reach out. You know, we'd love the opportunity to help them and in the process earn the opportunity to invest in them.
Wonderful. We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations, including Florin Tufan, co-founder of Solidify, and many more.
Most of the business data comes from two sources. Comes from LinkedIn or any major company that reached the scale needed to structure huge data on hundreds of millions of companies, tens of millions to be more precise. Okay, so one, there's LinkedIn, and two, there's you buy it from the government. And with the government, you have the same, you basically inherit all the inaccuracies of the government data. So for example, in most countries, you have no incentive to declare your real business activity. Sometimes you don't have the accurate code to declare your business activity. For example, for us, we do software development. Is that what we do? You can say that. If you go to our profile on Crunchbase, you'll find a much better definition than just software development, of course. But in relationship to the government, that's all we can classify as. And that was before we knew what we're going to do. And if we had become a web development agency and just made a different call at some point, it would have still said software development.
Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us today and listening to this episode of SaaS Stories. This is where I speak with the dreamers and visionaries who dared to think ahead and built world-class SaaS products. We hope this conversation helped you with the insights that you can go and apply right now to your own SaaS journey. We hope to have you here with us again in the next episode of SaaS Stories. SaaS Stories is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform, and is a BizCast original production. We'll be right back.